Leah, as you know from the board, is completing her PhD at UCLA in healthcare policy. Is that as close as we can say? Healthcare policy?
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. And after 16 years as a parish pastor, I returned to school for my graduate degree in healthcare administration and was a hospital administrator for 26 years, and so now retired. And so we thought we'd put this course together because we didn't have to manufacture a course with the concept of Christians no longer being strangers to the world. As you see, we've tried to put that together in this statement of who we are and what we're all about. We've had three sessions. This is our fourth session so far. We've had three sessions. We talked the first session, in a quick review here, we talked in the first session about the organization of healthcare, who docs are, who nurses are, who what specialties are, those kinds of things. Secondly, we talked about access. I'm sick, what do I do? And we talked about various people in the community, you might say. Leah talked about people with regard to both ethnic background, colors, those sorts of things, and their access to health care. And then last night we talked about quality, and we said under the banner of, or under the title of who's responsible or something like that, I forgot exactly who's in charge, we talked a little bit about the philosophy of healthcare and of personal healthcare. And we asked some questions about what do you think about your own health and who are you and are you personally responsible for your health and what do you think about preventative medicine and so forth. Okay, to tonight and to the subject of long-term care. And we noticed, if you saw our announcement on the kiosk, and Nancy did a nice thing for us today, as she told you, that we're not only concerned about long-term care in the context of you've got a grandmother someplace, or a mother or father someplace or other. We think we're going to demonstrate tonight, by simple demographics, that everybody had better be concerned about long-term care. Because not only does it affect a lot of people, the elderly, but we're finding out demographically, preventative medicine-wise, all those kinds of things, that many of you may find yourself in need of long-term care as our population continues to age. So, with that introduction about what we're going to do, we put up on the board some of the subjects that we're going to cover this evening, and not necessarily are we going to just talk about this in separate things. They're going to run together. But sometimes we feel like people who attend, especially for a first time, like to know what we are going to cover and how it's going to work. So I'm going to take the first four things here, and then we're going to ask Leah to finish up with the remainders and cover those things. So, everybody okay with that? All right? Okay. You said roll them to the tape man. We said that for our newcomers. I think you know that you can buy tapes of these sessions, okay? And I think they're also rather reasonable as far as I know about tapes. Well, the first thing that we have to say, what about this field of long-term care? What about the development of long-term care as a field, as a part of the healthcare system? You know, long-term care is a fairly recent development as a part of the healthcare system. How many people are as old as I am? Well, by the way, I have no apologies or no qualms about saying that I'm 67 years old, but I can remember that my first parish, I used to go, for the most part, to the county home because that was the long-term care, the place of delivery of long-term care. Do you remember that? Do you remember that the fact that the counties, as almost a welfare program, had a home, a farm even, if you will, where you went and you put mom and dad, if they didn't have any place else to go, if they didn't have anybody at home, that they could remain with and be taken care of? Well, we saw gradual changes in that happening. We noticed that as we got to taking care of, as our healthcare system took care of acute illnesses, the things that you and I go to see doctors about for immediate care, as we remedied some of those acute illnesses, and we thereby made people live longer, what emerged? Chronic problems, ongoing problems, problems that needed long-term care rather than what we call in the field acute care or short-term care. Some interesting statistics, for instance, reduction in acute illnesses have contributed to a historic increase in life expectancy. Do you know that in 1900, 47 years was as long as you could expect to live, and in 1989, 75.3 years? But we were making people live longer, and as a result, we said, that doesn't mean that they're necessarily healthy. They have chronic problems that crop up. And so as a result, we said, what are we going to do with them? Somebody's got to take care of these people. So as a result, we're seeing the demographic things that sort of driven this whole thing. Well, definition. Sometimes we need a definition of what we're talking about then. And the classic definition, and I share it with you in an academic way today, but I think maybe it's worth at least hearing. Long-term care is the set of health, and here comes the key thing. What's different, really different, about long-term care than acute care? The set of health and social services. Social services delivered over a sustained period to people who have lost or who never acquired some capacity for personal care. It ideally enables recipients to live with as much independence and dignity as possible. So that's sort of a definition of that I think most people can live with, broad enough and yet definitive enough that can tell us, what about this field of long-term care, and what are we trying to do with it, and what's different about it? And as I say, it's the social service component. Okay, so that's the introduction part of this. That's identifying what we're about tonight. Let's talk about now components of a long-term care system. And the first thing that most people do think about, and I start out that way by telling you about the county home and visiting people, because that's where long-term care was initially, as a part of a welfare system, was delivered to people. But let's talk about nursing homes now as a focal point, as we used to talk about the hospital as the focal point of the place where long-term care is given. We should probably add two things to this. We should probably say not only nursing homes, but we probably should say, for those of you who know these things, forgive me, but some people haven't heard about these. We have assisted living as one component. We have skilled nursing as another component. And then kind of up here, what we call CCRCs, and that is continuing care retirement communities, okay? So here's a progression of people who are out of their homes and need to be cared for, institutionalized. They may live in a retirement community. If they can't live in a retirement community, which is total independent living, then they live in what we call an assisted living home or apartments or whatever, which has people who come. There's definitions to what happens to you in those. Assisted living, people come and help you with your dressing or with your medications, those kinds of things. And finally, if you're ill enough, you live in a skilled nursing facility, and that's probably what most of us have in our minds about the old definition of nursing homes. So nursing homes are broader. The point about it is that nursing homes are broader than what they used to be, just the old skilled nursing facility. But you need to know some of those things to be comfortable with the terminology as to what a nursing home is. Well, how did we get historically where we are with regard to nursing homes and who's there and those kinds of things. It was back in 1935 that there was a program called Old Age Assistance, public assistance for low-income people. It was a part of the Social Security Act, and it sort of spurred there to be more than just county homes. And over the years, nursing homes, particularly after World War II, the population, as I say, was moving from an acute illness-centered population to a chronic illness population. They said, well, we have some place to go with these. And so there have been various public assistance programs. And then there came into being, as you all know, what? In 1960s, in the 60s, what?
Medicare
and?
Medicaid.
Now, let's see, just for the participatory part of this program, let's have a show of hands, please, as to the difference. Who knows the difference between Medicare and Medicaid?
How about a better question?
Okay.
Which pays for nursing homes?
Okay. Which pays for long-term care?
Does Medicare?
Which pays for most of long-term care? We even have to qualify it for that.
Medicaid. The irony is that most people think that when they're 65 or over, they get Medicare. However, Medicare has no component of nursing home or long-term care. It's Medicaid. So.
Okay.
But we're also, this is a plug for our session tomorrow. Tomorrow we talk about the financing of health care. So we'll talk about Medicare.
We're going to touch on it here a little bit, but the real subject tomorrow night is the whole realm of financing health care, okay? But we have to say it today because it was in 1965 when Medicare and Medicaid became a reality that we saw a real spurring of the growth of nursing homes, because for-profit organizations said, aha, here is a source of income that we can tap into for Mrs. Jones or Mr. Smith, and we get paid for it. Even if they don't have the assets to cover their care in our nursing home, we can thereby test them, a means test, and say they need help, and as a result, bang, we'll get paid. Now, it's far more complex than that. I only mention it because that spurred, and 3/4 of the nursing homes in the United States today are for-profit nursing homes. Just about 73% are for-profit nursing homes in the United States today, okay? Well, all right, so most old people, Leah brought that out, because most elderly people that you work with say, I have Medicare, and therefore I can go to a nursing home. And they don't quite have that relationship between Medicaid and Medicare, and that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. But I'm glad that she mentioned that to you.
I know you're going to talk about this tomorrow, but you have to have $1,800. You can only have $1,800 in assets in order to be eligible for Medicaid, as I understand.
Yeah, you have to spend down. You basically have to be poverty elderly to qualify. So that's the rub.
So just to show, Medicare only pays 8.8% of nursing home expenses, okay? And I'll tell you some other statistics. 51% of all nursing home expenditures that it is paid for, no, it's up to 60 now. 60% of the expenses at nursing home is paid for by Medicaid. Okay? That's a rule of thumb, and you can dispute it with me because there are some caveats or some specialty things there, but for the sake of our knowledge. Okay. And you know that you can go into a long-term care facility, and you can start with that you have some assets, and then expend those assets, and then depending upon whether you have they have a Medicaid bed open, yet for you, because they're only going to allocate a certain amount of Medicaid beds to long-term care, you can maybe stay there. Okay, well, so much for, as I said, a discussion about nursing homes and types and this kind of thing. This is an overview thing. Let me stop at that point and say, What do you want to know about that that we didn't cover? What would you like to ask about that you heard about?
Yeah, Barbara.
Barbara.
Just following up on what you just said.
Yes.
Okay, so you're in and you use up your assets.
Yes.
A Medicaid bed is not available. What do they do with you?
Well, depending upon a couple of things, who owns the facility, nonprofit organizations usually have a higher number of Medicaid beds, and they'll usually keep you and, so to speak, not turn you out. But for-profit organizations, if the Medicaid component of their nursing home beds numbers are used up, you'll have to find another place to go that does have a Medicaid bed. Generally speaking, hard to make rules, or hard to make generalization rather, because each individual facility has a policy for this. The government has tried to say across the board, you can't do this and you can't do that. And as a matter of fact, the industry, 15,000 nursing homes in the United States, and the industry has about 15,000 different policies.
Are they turning people out into the street?
No. Well, they won't turn you out on the street because that's illegal.
Send you a long way from home.
Yeah, but they will say that you have 3 months to find your mother's assets will be spent down in 3 months, according to our calculations. And either you as a family will pay for her, but if she needs to go on Medicaid, sorry, we already have used up the component of our Medicaid beds, and so therefore you have 3 months to find your mother a bed in some other facility that still takes Medicaid patients. Okay?
It's tough to do, too, because most places have waiting lists.
Right. Most places does. And there is a figure that's being thrown around these days, and one hates to lock in it because the nursing home costs in North Dakota are not the same as in Los Angeles, as in Denver, this kind of thing. But the rule of thumb is $37,000 a year for a skilled nursing facility bed. But my last facility 3 years ago, we ran it at $27,500. So
where was that?
They're all in Arvada, Colorado.
California.
Yes, sir?
It might be comforting to the people to know what the percentage is of people over age 65 in the United States who are actually living in a...
Actually, I'll probably get a little bit more into that.
Okay.
And talk about the needs and the use of
okay.
the people.
We're not turning down questions,
yeah,
but
if I don't get to it.
There's a reason for her including in that, which springboards from what she's got going to say about this. Okay, well, the point about this is that while all this is going on, you know, the issue of quality, are we going to only be financially concerned? And some people really barked at the government paying the Medicaid bill and say all you're doing is collecting money, and therefore whole reform acts have been passed. One of called OBRA was passed, the omnibus whatever else. Yes, whatever. And the attempt has been to not only just pay the bill, but to make sure those who were getting the Medicaid care, got what they needed, and that it was quality care. There have been accusations all over the map, and some of them true, some of them not true, but enough true that indeed it warranted the government to be involved and to investigate this, that people were collecting the Medicaid care and that there was a different level of care for the private pay and the Medicaid people. So let's hang out the wash. That's true. Dirty laundry is true. I mean, you can't go away, okay? Well, a hurried thing, but we're on a time schedule. Community-based services. Long-term care is not only institutional. Long-term care has to do with other services. And of course, when we talk about other services and we talk about people with financial limitations, we say one of the things to do is to keep them at home, isn't it? Shall we keep them at home? Not only because of the financial thing, but because we love them. And therefore, we better shelter them, do what we can for them at home. So you know all the scenarios. We don't have to build those for you. Build an apartment on the house for a mom or a dad. They got a room in the house. But meantime, I have to be away at work. Is there somebody that can come in and provide services and care to a mom because she needs physical therapy, she needs this, she needs that, and so those kinds of things. And so we've tried all kinds of things. How many people know the word SHMO? Do you know that word? As far as social, health care, maintenance organization, we've had some pilot test things called SHMOs. And instead of being just an HMO, a health maintenance organization, they had social concerns and health together because that's what long-term care is. And so they put them together and they tried that for a while. And it was so costly that there's a few demonstration projects, one of which is in Denver, and it's not going to work around the nation because they're too costly. But the point about it is that Medicaid came along and said, well, if we're going to pay for people when they're institutionalized, let's also see if we can pay for here, both as an economy measure, and because that's maybe all those people will either want or need. So Medicaid has come along under a couple of programs and has paid for community-based services. They're into all kinds of things like personal care, case management, respite care, adult daycare. Medicaid is putting their money in there into those things because they have found out that not everybody needs to be institutionalized, and because that's a more cost-effective way of spending the United States tax dollar for people who need long-term care. And so as a result, they have... it says, just as a statistic that may or may not grab you, nevertheless, just 5% of Medicaid's $191 billion budget is spent on community-based services, while 33% is spent on nursing homes. Just so that you have some kind of figures like that in your head. We're in a period of change, and so... we know that somehow or other we got to finance services for people, whether they're in nursing homes or whether they're in community-based services, but we haven't quite got a model that works for everybody on all the places. And so we would say that long-term care is in a state of transition right now. It has to happen because of the demographics of our society, but we don't exactly know where we're going right now. Leah.
Are you
going to
talk about the private financing?
Oh, yes, pardon me. I want to say a word about private finance. Thanks, Cliff. I have we have a concern about people understanding that there are private sector financing programs. Could I do another show of hands? How many of you have long-term care insurance? One? How many of your parents or the older people in your life have long-term care insurance? Mm-hmm. Two, huh?
Out of curiosity, how long ago did you start yours?
It's just starting now. It's through the public employees retirement system. Teachers as well as state employees can. And it's probably the most cost-effective that's available.
What state are you in?
California.
They're going to be changing that quite drastically.
No, it's brand new.
The program is new. It's been in place for a while, but they're going to be changing that quite dramatically because they're not charging enough money for it.
Well, I'm sure over time that's going to happen.
Well, there's different ways of doing this, and there's all kinds of jargonese we can throw out about that, but equity conversion. Have you heard that term? You got somebody who's lived in a house for a long time, and they own the house, and you find somebody who said, I'll, in effect, give you what your house is worth, and you can use that money to buy long-term care. And you convert the equity that you got in your house, which is your biggest asset. And most elderly people in the United States, their biggest asset is the house that they own, and it's probably paid off. And so equity conversion, there's individual medical accounts, there's private insurance. I think that for somebody about 65, I think probably the best insurance I've been able to find for somebody who finally gets around to buying long-term care insurance, if you can buy long-term care insurance for $5,000-$6,000 a year, you're lucky, you know, and have it be cover the things that you think it should cover. Now, a lot of people, you can buy cheaper, but most people I find out, whether it's from Prudential, whether it's from Travelers, whether it's from any of the major insurers, ARP included, most people aren't happy with insurance policy that's El Cheapo. Yes, sir?
At age 65, you can buy it for about $1,200 a year.
Well, I know you can buy it. The question is whether it's going to cover what you really want it to cover. And that's, of course, that's like buying, you want the car with a stereo radio in it or a CD program in it and so forth. But yes, absolutely, no question about it. You can buy it for $100 a month. But what have you got when you got it?
Got a good program from CNA.
Yeah. Well,
Lutheran Brotherhood has all.
Lutheran Brotherhood.
That's what I wanted to ask you. Do you know anything about how Lutheran Brotherhood or AAL long-term care plans rate?
We're on very delicate ground here. And one of the things that we talked about in our preparation for this is, and one of the things that we have to be careful about, is that we know the sensitivities of Lutherans with regard to AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood. And so we will neither support them nor will we knock them, because we're not in the business of selling long-term care insurance. If you want to see me privately, I'll tell you what I think about them, because I know both their programs and the range of things that you can buy under their programs. But I think it'd be on tape, be a very indelicate thing for me to say anything about them.
I sell for CNA. So,
good.
But I'm not going to say anything about CNA.
Good.
Other than I just what I
good.
Said.
And that's the same reason I think I shouldn't say anything about Lutheran Brotherhood.
Well, and I'd like to say something about Lutheran Brotherhood and AAL, because I'm not up front. Both of them have excellent plans. They're fairly expensive, but the reason they're such good plans is if you have a claim, they're going to pay. And the reason they're going to pay is they can't afford bad PR.
Yeah, that's true.
So they're going to pay because they don't want you bad-mouthing them in your congregation. So they're good plans, they're fairly expensive, but they're going to pay, and that's very important, because some other companies may not pay when you need the money. And I believe that I stand on it and say those two companies will pay.
Right. And you can say that and I can't.
Right. And another thing, you see, when they have disability income policies, Lutheran Brotherhood and AAL have to pay too, because they need the good PR, and they have excellent plans.
Well, one of the things that the social scientists are concerned about as they take a look at our healthcare industry is that we do not create a class system in the United States based upon care of the elderly. Shall we have a policy, a United States healthcare long-term care policy that is based upon wealthy people being able to afford it and poor people having a lesser system that the government pays for? And that's why I say we're in a state of transition right now, because the dynamics of or the demographics of our aging population and of those in need, whether aging or not, of long-term care is such that we get some real things that we have to take a look at. Leah?
Well, that's a good lead-in for me, because it's really the demographics and a few of those issues that drive the next couple points. There is a very big difference between what someone needs versus what someone uses. And so that's why it's important to break those two things out. We can talk about the needs, but that doesn't necessarily match the way our long-term care system is being used. And I'm gonna walk through a couple of part of this presentation is going to be a little bit more statistical, and I'm going to rely on my notes, but I think it draws a bit of a picture. We talk about the variations in service needs. First of all, we're in our country having a big shift in the race and ethnicity of the people who are living longer. In 1990, only 14% of our elderly, meaning 65 and over, about when they talk about in general, but only 14% of that population was Asian, African American, Native American, and Latino. And in 50 years, they expect it to be over one-third of our population. So because of the shift in that, it's an important recognition to make because there are different functional disabilities or different problems, both culturally, ethnicity, and genetically, that people suffer from due to their race and basically their circumstance. So that's one consideration that in this transition is going to we're going to need to have foresight and plan for. Basically, programs that are aimed, right now, all of our long-term care programs, both community and nursing home, are structurally based. They're really aimed at the types and levels of disability that white people are used to being sort of subjected to, for lack of a better word. But it's interesting to look at various statistics because, for instance, African Americans have the highest level of things like diabetes, heart disease, arthritis, and high blood pressure. So as these people age, we're going to have a shift in the kind of care that we need to be giving. The other interesting thing is that you can't, as you all know, you may be feeling, or a doctor may check you out and say you're fine, but how you feel is very important. So when you ask these different population groups how they feel, whites always feel better than the other ethnic groups. Even if you adjust for their age, they're all the same age, even if you adjust for all of their what's called morbidities or anything that's wrong with them, blacks will always claim to feel much worse, just feel worse than anybody else. So you realize there's other social and psychological issues working with their actual acute health care needs that are going to have to be accounted for when we talk about long-term care. Just in brief, Latinos are very, very similar to whites in some of their reporting and also some of their disease patterns, as are some of the Asians, some of the Asian ethnicities. As you know, there's so many, but they have very different cultural needs than a white population, and so that's going to impact our care in 50 years. One of the things you were correct in mentioning all the time is saying your mom, because really when we talk about gender, women, as you would guess, are far outpacing men, not only in lifespan, I think we've got two or three more years on the guys, but also women have a tendency still to marry a bit younger, and then the men die first. So what's happening is that women are often left alone.
Yeah.
Yes?
Before you go too far, what do we get sick with or get in trouble with, white people?
Who's we?
White people?
Yeah. The white. We get sick with the same things, heart disease, cancer, high blood pressure, but we have them at, if you take the whole population, our rate of it is at a lower rate than the black rate. So they, if 10 of us are in this room, maybe one of us will get something, whereas three of them will get it. So they have a higher rate of these things than we do, and it usually kills them much more faster than us, which is part of the reason why the white population has a tendency to have filled the ranks in terms of the ethnicity so far. But as our population gains so greatly, we're going to see a lot more of the ethnic minorities also aging above 65 and benefiting from some of the services available to them.
What about Alzheimer's? Is in blacks, Asians, and whites, is it the same? Or?
You know, I don't have the actual information on that. I can look that up for you. It's actually in this book, but I don't have specific because it's under mental health. And I know that I can find it for you.
That's one of the biggest things in nursing homes.
Right. Well, anyway, so we get back to gender. There's huge gender differences, which up until this point have driven actually a lot of the long-term care services. You'll find social services being more adapted to women's needs at times. Basically, 60% of total elderly are women, and 72% of people who are 75 and over are women. So you can see that the numbers get more and more great for women as they age. Women at all ages experience more functional disabilities, unfortunately. Sort of, you can look at it in a really simplistic way that men are healthier and then they die. And women just kind of slowly creak and get older and older, and we have various things wrong with us and aches and pains, but we stick it out for the long run, whereas the guys just fall over at some point. So at all levels, we have different needs. But we need more long-term care for a very fundamental reason. I've already indicated that, and that is that we have a tendency to live alone for longer. The ironic thing is that women are often caregivers, but then those people that they're either their husbands or their family often, I'll get into this a little bit later, but abandon them, or they need to live alone in various places and need more long-term care. A couple more statistics is that 80% of the elderly who live alone are women. So if there are men who are in the elderly category, they usually are living with either their wives or family. And 53% of women who are 75 and over live alone. So quite a number of older women live by themselves. Again, we're talking about need, not so much the use of health services. Finally, the other differential thing that separates is class. We don't like to talk about class very much in our country. What we usually do is we call it income, and that is a point in time, like how much money did you make last year? So we have very few studies or very few people who have looked into class research, like how do different classes vary. But in other countries like Sweden and Norway and other places that have a little bit more determined class system, they've shown a direct impact your class has on your health status. So even if you, again, control for everything, everyone's the same age, everyone's the same, has the same income or whatever in that various degrees, you can pretty much figure that people in lower classes are less healthy, all right? The reason this is important is because it's going to impact the kind of care we're giving to people. You can't just lump everybody together. It also impacts when we do talk about income. You'll talk a little bit about the opportunities for buying health care. In our country alone, men who are 65 and over, their average income was $15,000 in 92. That's 2.5 times more what black and Latino women make. It's about $7,000 or so, or have that income. So, and if those women are the ones needing health care, those women are the ones who are going to access the long-term care, you can see why all of a sudden we're using Medicaid in getting these people care. And I guess one more statistic here when we talk about class is that 80% of blacks enter nursing homes on Medicaid, whereas 40% of whites do. Now, I mention this because it really makes a difference in how long-term care is used. When we now talk about, okay, so who's using long-term care? If we look at a snapshot, 70% of nursing home residents are women. Well, that's no surprise when you think that women are living longer, and so therefore they're making up that kind of population. There is a lot of feeling that nursing home admissions are biased, that they're racist, and this is one of the areas that people are trying to make amends. A lot of this, you realize the complexity though, because a lot of this is based on the fact of who's paying the bill. And if you get most of the African Americans coming into nursing homes already on Medicaid, and we have a lot of the white population private paying, so they're paying usually a higher amount, you can imagine that a nursing home is going to want to pick those who can pay the most, or are basically not filling up the Medicaid base, but are filling the private. So there has been a trend over this time, in general, across the United States, that there's thought that the ethnic minorities are not getting the same access to long-term care that often the white population has been getting. The sickest and most disabled whites are in nursing homes often and also receive more paid care at home versus informal care given by families. And the reasons a lot of times for this discrepancy in nursing homes are, as I mentioned, the higher occupancy allows nursing homes to be picky about who they choose. But also there's some pretty simple reasons. People feel that they've gone out and done surveys and feel that a lot of the ethnic minorities are often less informed or knowledgeable just purely about their choices. They don't even know what their options are for community-based services or various steps of nursing home care. And then also there are some professionals who feel that you have to often get a referral from a physician to get into a nursing home, to get a bed. And that there's some bias in that referral process, that somehow we need to make that a more equitable process, that everyone has equal access to that referral. You mentioned a little bit about a two-class system, and I think that's the other thing about our long-term care use. We really have the separation of people who can pay privately versus people who can pay through the government. And some of the statistics are that, unfortunately, Medicaid patients are 4 to 7 times more difficult to place, both for lack of beds and also just because they may be less desirable because they pay a lesser rate. Medicaid patients are often found to be in the lowest quality nursing homes, so there's also a feel that they're not getting the same care, even if they are in a long-term care facility. And that Medicaid recipients don't often have as much money for incidentals, having a phone in their room, having various laundry services, whatever the case may be. So there's this two-tiered system that people are trying to, again, level this playing field and make not make it so much that a two-class system. One of the biggest misconceptions that you'll hear people talk a lot about is that we institutionalize everybody. They get old and we just put them all in into nursing homes. And although we probably have a more structured nursing home environment than some countries, we still have 70 to 80% of our long-term care delivered at home. So it's something to, I think, pat ourselves on the back and not beat ourselves up so much, because there are a lot of people out there who are really working hard to keep people in the home, or unfortunately, if that's all they can afford, but they're really working hard to keep this the case. There's a whole study or a whole concern in the community-based services to support the caregivers. Caregivers are often under a lot of conflict, financial pressure and strain. They are subjected to a lot of social and emotional and financial problems because of this extra burden. And often people don't provide the support to these people that is needed. They focus on the patient and not so much the caregiver. Well, when you think about that, their leisure activities are often reduced, their stress is increased, their financial commitments are much higher. And a lot of the community-based services, or the, you hear nowadays if you read the newspaper, community health networks, are creating support groups and almost like the adult daycare and things started to give caregivers a few hours or a break to themselves as well. So the caregivers become a very important component when we talk about long-term care. The level of stress pretty much on these caregivers has a lot to do with how sick the patient is, whether they have the financial abilities to buy the medical equipment, and whether they can get extra care in or have some time relieved. Interestingly, the caregivers are often very similar demographics to the patients themselves. As you can imagine, the majority of them are women. There's 72% of all the caregivers are women. And if your child provides care to you or lets you stay in your house when you get old, most likely you'll be living, 77% of the time you'll be living with a daughter and not a son. There's an interesting way of looking at this, or a separation of work. How would you imagine, what kind of care do daughters give the elderly parents versus the kind of care sons give? Both of them say, I'm going to go spend some time with mom today.
I'm guessing sons probably, if this is your question right, offer more financial help and more sort of tangible help, and daughters offer more emotional support and love and that sort of thing.
That's exactly right. A huge component, or another way of saying that, is men usually have scheduled time. They come over, they say, I'll be by at 3, they'll fix a broken window, they'll do the financial stuff, whatever, but it's scheduled, very tangible work. Whereas daughters usually have a tendency to spend longer periods of time, much less tangible work, but at the same time, you know, a lot of the tangible work as well, but even just meals and all of that kind of stuff. There's a huge separation in the kind of work that even daughters and sons both provide.
And I suppose even in just sort of hands-on medical care, daughters, particularly because they're usually women that they're caring for, feel more comfortable.
They do all the bathing
and
clothing. Right, right. So there's a big difference in that as well. For the caregivers, once again, their demographics, they're often both here. You'll notice that we said number 8 and number 9. Both informal caregivers, so people in the home or daughters providing care, as well as workers in the long-term care system. Because, as you can imagine, the economic pressure to keep the prices as low as possible, especially if Medicaid is paying 60% of the healthcare bill and they're paying less than private pay and the rest, there's a crunch on these facilities to keep the prices, or the costs, I should say, as low as possible. And therefore, it's sort of notorious that nursing home workers are not paid very well. They're often paid pretty low sort of skilled wages versus nurses and people in hospitals that have an acute care training. Therefore, they've had a tendency to attract pretty sort of low income, almost all women. In New York City, 99% of the nursing home caregivers are women, and about 75% of them are in ethnic minorities, so either Black, Latino, Asian. And these people, whether they, again, are in the long-term care system or they're working at home, you realize when we look back as to the problems that caregivers have, are under some of the biggest stressors in their own lives. Not having enough money, not having enough flexibility in their hours, not just being able to take the day, the afternoon off because somebody needs to go to the doctor. So the, you put those two and it's together, and it's a very volatile situation where you've got people providing care who have so many issues themselves to clothe, feed. Oh, the other, I don't remember the actual statistic, but a large majority of them are single moms. So you put all that together, and it's just like an explosion waiting to happen for the people who we want to care for, our elderly, as well as, again, these are the people who live in the homes. Are often the people who need the most support as well. So that's that kind of, it has a consideration to how we structure and devise some social policies and come up with community-based services. I think I'm going to stop there. I think okay. We're going to open it up. I don't okay. want to go on too long and leave at least 10 minutes of...
As I said when we introduced that, this evening's topic, this is such a large topic that yeah. we didn't know really how to, in 1 hour session, satisfy the request that a number of you had with regard to this. We put together survey information supported to a certain degree by statistical information that we thought you ought to know if you didn't know those things. But now please tell us what you'd like to know. Yes, ma'am.
Have you any notion of what the Lutheran Church as a church body is doing about long-term care, either institutionally or the informal support for caregivers in a home?
Well, I'm glad sometimes we tend to knock our church, and thank goodness we can wave our flag that the Lutheran Church, as pan-Lutheran, we're talking about Missouri Synod as well, ELCA, and some of the other smaller groups, we have the largest number of long-term care facilities in the United States. If you take, there's various management arrangements, and some of them aren't really technically Lutheran, but they call themselves Lutherans and all, but we have the largest group of long-term care facilities in the entire United States sponsored by one denomination.
So we're profit?
Huh? non-profit, I should say. I assume that we knew that was non-profit. Oh, no, because we're as I said in an introduction, the for-profit industry is three-quarters of the long-term care beds are run by the for-profit industry. You know the big names, don't you, as far as people like that? There's
Beverly
Industries is the largest in the United States probably right now. One based here in Washington, I can't pull it up right now. Yes, ma'am.
Well, I was just going to say that my mother is in a nursing home. I told you this earlier.
Yes, yes.
And, it's called, run by the Board of Ministries.
Board of Social Ministry.
Yeah.
Which is the organization of the Minnesota, well, it's, there are many synods in Minnesota, but it originally started out when there was only one Minnesota synod of the LCA. It had a Board of Social Ministry and it operated. Mm-hmm. Now it operates all of the or most of the Lutheran nursing homes in the Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota area.
And I just can't say enough for the atmosphere in that place. It's really wonderful, but they are having a lot of trouble with keeping nurse aides because they can get work at Walmart for the same money and
California Lutheran Homes is a big thing in California. Illinois, there's Lutheran Social Services of Illinois.
How do you access these places? How do you get to them?
Well, I like to say, pastors, am I putting you on the spot on doing this? And I'd like to say that every pastor, one of his responsibilities for his congregation is to be knowledgeable about long-term care, and at least to whom, somebody that you can go and say to your pastor, I don't know anything about long-term care, please put me into the system or acquiring information. Is that fair?
Yeah.
A fair thing to lay on a pastor?
Yeah. We have basically two homes in the San Francisco Bay Area. One is Sam Wilson Home in Oakland, and the other is Sunnyview Home in Cupertino.
Yeah.
What is happening in California is that they are forming management groups, and the large Catholic organization, which I think comes out of the Sisters of Mercy, mm-hmm. is it Far West Catholic? What is it? Do you know the name of it?
Catholic Healthcare, I think.
Well, there's CHO, and there's all kinds of, you know, nobody's working in California right
but,
now.
This is an interesting development. Salem Home, which is started by the Swedish Lutheran Churches, and is in Oakland, is a very nice facility, but the management of it, they have formed something with the large Catholic organization. Mm-hmm. And for management, and this will give them access also all of that. There's a huge amount of money for expansion and development available through this resource. In San Francisco, I think the Sisters of Mercy have something like 1,000 or 1,300 units that they manage for elderly
yeah.
people.
Yeah,
these are various levels of care.
You know,
various levels.
And healthcare, and particularly long-term care component, is becoming a matter of giants in the earth. Do you know that? I mean, you know, it's economy of scale thing. Aren't the hospitals in your town, wherever you live, forming mergers with people and affiliations with people? Well, from everything from recruitment of personnel. To standardizing policies, to meeting OBRA regulations, to what you name it. There is the feeling that it can be done more efficiently by a parent organization as they manage whatever be their original heritage or their founding. And so a Lutheran organization may sign a contract with a Catholic organization to manage them, because in that particular time, in that particular place, they're doing the best job of, for instance, California welfare laws. Yes, ma'am. Yeah,
I'd like to put the onus back on the individual. I mean, we're Lutherans, or many of us are.
Yes, ma'am.
But the way you're going to impact the system is you get on a board. And, you know, that nursing home board, that hospital board, and you say, I can't go along with this policy. And I know that for profit you're going to have a tougher time getting in, but you get in there and you say, nursing is the guts of any nursing care, and let's take care of those workers. One of the things that we've done at St. John's is we've gone in cahoots with nearby Lutheran Church, and we provide daycare for those nurse aides. And, you know, reduced rates, good nutrition, all those kids are safe, you know. Unless we get in there and say, those are the things that's going to improve mom's care, it's not going to happen.
That's why we wrote this statement that we did that said, thus individuals, congregations and communities where Christians, we could say Lutheran Christians, but we know we have other people, and we didn't mean to be exclusive about that, so that we said just Christians, and the governments they support should not reflect a stranger or a standoff. So we support that philosophy, and if you were here last night when I talked about individual responsibility, I included that in that, not only for your own personal health, but it's time to say, indeed, I'm going to get involved.
And when they're going to sell to a big corporation, say, we need a local board, you know, that's going to have some input that can say, you know, let's look at this social or issue or whatever. But unless We're in there. It's so easy. It's we and they, and we get stuck with something we don't want.
Lutheran Homes and Hospitals out of Fargo, North Dakota, has that philosophy of management. First of all, they're not Lutheran, but they wear the name Lutheran, but they're not Lutheran anymore. But they were founded by Lutherans, so they have that name. But they come into an area and manage a nursing home or a hospital, and they insist on a private local or on a local board. Yes, sir.
Most of us aren't going to end up in a church-sponsored home, which leads me to my question.
Sure.
I think you respond to.
Sure.
When people ask me which is the best home for their mother or father or whatever, I tell them the home that's closest to where you live is the best one for you, because that way you can visit at least once or twice a day if it's the closest to your home. Because I think you'll get the best service if you are there every day or twice a day, and in a sense assisting with the care of your own loved one. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I guess I won't. I guess I can't buy that one because I have seen some pretty bad for-profit, and you'll know where I stand because that's the tradition I come out of. I'm dyed in the wool, and I'm sorry to some of you nurses if you work for for-profit hospitals or long-term care facilities. I'm not knocking you. I'm holding up my conviction that the non-profit route is the way to go in healthcare. But right down the street is a for-profit nursing home, and I can visit there three times a day, and I may or may not, I mean, I'm not totally opposed to what you say, but I may or may not have any effect on the care. If they're staffing at a minimal, because profit is the motive, the first and foremost, they got to pay the stockholders, and they got to have their stock worth something on the exchange. And so if profit is the first and foremost motive rather than compassionate care, and I'll say because that's my witness, because Christ is in their heart and the love of Christ is in their heart, then I say I don't care whether they're down the street or
in this market where you have people waiting to get into for-profit places, they can cut costs. When it shifts, when there are more beds available than there are people to fill them, then the customer has got a chance to affect that market. But that situation is not going to be here for a while, I don't think.
But I will support
because of the aging of one of the things. Do you have any statistics there about what percentage of the people over 80 or over 85 are still living in the community?
Well, I only had over 75, and
what's the number?
Let me see. I actually
75. Are people over 75 still living in the community?
I think I do have that, but I don't think I wrote it down. Let me get that to you. It's high.
It's very high.
It's very high.
I know a few years ago I read some statistics that the number of people over 85 living in the community
was
something like 66 or 70, 60% or something like
that. And of that,
85% of those over 65 are still living in the community.
But and that's why we put over 85.
Yeah. And that's why we put number 3 up there, because it's going like this. It's going like this. Community services to support those people who are continuing to live at home, who need those services, are going up. Not only for a financial reason, but also the fact that they're there. I want to support your statement in one sense, sir. And that is that if mom or dad are institutionalized, have to be in any of those continuing care, assisted living, skilled nursing facilities, dear children, as much as is within you, and I know geographic location and all of that makes a difference about this, but understand that because you're paying for that care does not relieve you of the responsibility of participating in that care. That's just a reality that you say, well, we're paying for this, everything should be done for mother. It's not going to be done for mother. And so you better be there to do those little fine things
fine-tune her care, and to be a certain, yes, guardian about what kind of care she is receiving. Yes, ma'am?
I just wanted to reinforce what you said. When my mother went to a nursing home just a couple months ago, the doctor told me, he said, I'm on the board there. I'm the medical director. But he said, I just wanted to know that you have to pay attention to what's going on there, because he said, it's a wonderful place, and it's in my community, and if I need to go to a nursing home, I'll go there. But he said, you have to be involved. And
I think that's true with any social service.
Right.
That's true if your child goes to school. That's true of anything
right.
along the lifespan.
Man, you need to be involved. Yeah. We're going to ring the bell on it, folks. So, yeah.
One last question. Where do we go from here? I mean, how do we get more information? Do you have resources?
Yes, that's one of the things that the teachers up here kind of commit themselves to, and that is that Leah and I are here for conversations after the formal class period, and we'll give you whatever, or we'll point you in the right direction for anything. Okay?
ARC has some good stuff too.
Yes, and that's one of our
references. Every county has an area aging council
where
you can get local information.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
So we'll be here. I think Vesper is in 5 minutes, so we'll call it. Thanks for coming. Tomorrow, come if you want to talk about financing, okay?
Thank you very much.
Okay, you betcha.
St. John's was a coalition of all the
You better get long-term care insurance.
You better not get feet. Good for
you. End of tape. End of tape.
Is long-term care and insurance something everybody should have?
Well, the point is that we've got a sign up for long-term care.
Nobody thinks they're going to get rich. Only term life.
So you're saying only term life insurance?
Whole life. It is only for that insurance.
What was that?
I don't have any idea.
Whole life. Regular life insurance. Only for the insurance company, they make the money out of it. They take your money and they invest it and they pay you back a minimal amount. You can do better by putting your money, if you'll do that, and discipline yourself and put it in an investment.
Right.
What you need for insurance is that you need to have catastrophic coverage, and so you buy term insurance.
Do you want to use your term policy? Dad, here's your coat.
What?
Here's your coat.
Oh, my coat, we got a gold.
How old are you? 31. I just sold my 29-year-old son a $250 million policy for $200 a year. $250 million. That's a 10-year level term, 10 or 15-year level term. The premium stays the same. I think it's 15 years. For $300 a year. That's, I think that was the first colony, like insurance colony, the first colony's name of one of the companies. Okay. There are about 20 companies.
This is the fellow I want.
If you pick
up
Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine, there'll be about 4 ads in there from companies that you can call on the telephone with an 800 number and tell them your age and your name and your address, and they'll send you a list of 7 companies that have the best rates for what you want. And are you single?
No, actually, I'm married to her.
Okay. Then what you want, do you have any children yet?
No.
Are you planning to have any children?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what you need is a plan that's going to have a level premium for 20 years. Because you want to make sure that your children are at least 15 before that plan runs out.
Yeah.
So get a 20-year level term. How much money do you make a year?
Oh, somewhere in the 70 area.
Okay. On that basis, if you don't have insurance at work, you should have at least a $500,000 policy. And you can buy that, like I say, for $400 a year.
Right.
So really you can't afford not to have it for that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
What I want to know, is there a criteria that's been set up for
people to look at when they're going to buy long-term insurance. I don't mind.
Age-wise or asset-wise?
Both.
Okay.
I don't mind part of having my Social Security
right.
and part of my pension go for my being in long-term. But what, you know...
How old are you?
73.
Okay. Long-term care insurance is expensive, age 73. Once you get past 65 to 69, it gets to be fairly expensive. What I would do is I would sit down with you and say, what are your total assets? We would sit down and figure out your equity in your house and everything that you own, what your assets are. If your assets were under $100,000, I'd say don't buy any at all.
Uh-huh.
Because what's going to happen if you needed it, you'd use up your assets and you'd go on Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
If you have considerably more than $100,000 of total assets, everything that's mm-hmm. got a number to it, then what you do is you take your income. Let's say your income is $3,000 a month. Are you single or married?
I'm widowed, yeah.
So let's say that your income right now is $3,000 a month. You could pay the whole nursing home care because you got $3,000 a month of income anyway, and that's what nursing homes cost.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you could pay it all, but you don't want to use all your income, even though you got some other assets, you don't want to use all your income to pay the bill. So you say, I'd like to have my policy pay half the cost of the nursing home, and I'll pay the other half out of my income.
Okay.
So you're going to pay $1,500 of your income toward the bill, and you need $1,500 a month of coverage.
Okay.
So basically, you need $50 a day
uh-huh.
of coverage. You, at your age, you probably still could buy $50 a day of coverage for about $1,200 a year,
uh-huh.
which is a reasonable amount of your income to pay out.
See, that's the mm-hmm. kind of conversation that people my age need to
right.
know.
But all salespeople, even Luther Brother and the AL, they'll try to sell you a Cadillac plan.
Well, no. Well, they don't get it. That's why I don't.
Well, but they'll try to sell you one that will pay the whole cost of the nursing home, and you don't need that if you have income that you can use to pay part of it.
Yeah.
Then
can
also.
Have a card with you?
No, because I'm not carrying my billfold up here because.
Well, I'm going to write
your name. Okay, my name is. I'll just give you my name. And you can, I can give you my phone number, but you can also just call information. I'm in Ventura, California.
Well, that's right. I can still call,
Okay.
Maybe you could refer me to somebody in Minneapolis?
805.
Because, now my husband just had prostate cancer.
So right, that's gonna pretty much cut him out of the chance to buy long-term care insurance. How old is your husband?
62.
Okay. Probably until age 67. There's usually a 5-year window on cancer
uh-huh.
where a company won't sell you insurance because you have cancer. If you have a 5-year window where you're clean at the end of 5 years, then he could probably buy it.
Okay.
And at age 67, he could still buy it at a reasonable price. Now, if you have assets, another thing that you can do, rather than buying the long-term care plan, is there are some companies now that have what they call a single premium life insurance policy, where let's say that you had a $50,000 CD, and you weren't using the interest on that money anyway, and you wanted to leave it to your kids. You can put that $50,000 into either a single premium life insurance plan or into an annuity. There are only a very few of these out, and AAL and Luther Brother don't happen to sell them. But in either case, if you need nursing home care, they will quadruple the amount of money and make it available for nursing home care. Or if you never use it, you don't lose it.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you still own the life insurance policy, you still own the annuity. And when you die, the money is still available in your estate. But if you need it for nursing home care, they quadruple. In the case of the annuity, in the case of life insurance, it's at least twice as much that they will give you back for nursing home care. So there are some options that are unknown to 99% of the people in the country.
I just figured there were things out there that could be done.
Yeah, there are.
And I want my kids to have some things, and I want the church to have some things.
Right.
I don't have a whole lot, but my kids won't spend my money the way I want them to spend it, so
right.
I'm going to see that it's spent kind of the way I want it.
Right.
And
do you have a living trust?
Yeah, I've got a trust with the Lutheran women, and So that's taken care of. And they'll, you know, as long as they live, they'll get something off of it. But, you know, the basic amount is going to go to the church. But this insurance, I see the cost going up, and I can't control that cost. So I thought, well, I'm just...
Regardless of when you buy it, in a period of about, let's say at age 65, a person sat around and didn't buy long-term care insurance, but they did buy it at 75. From age 75 to 85, the premiums would be just as much as if you had that insurance for the whole 20 years. So it does pay to buy it earlier, but you don't want to buy too much.
See, that's what I don't want.
So you buy, it's always available in $10 units per day. So you buy 5 units, so you get $50 of coverage or $80 of coverage or whatever it is you want. And then be sure that you also buy what's called an inflation protection. And they have two inflation protections. One is called simple interest or simple inflation, and the other is compound. The simple means that if you buy, let's use $100 a day as an example.
Yeah,
If you buy $100 a day, the second year you'll have $105 a day because it always adds 5% a year to the original 100 is what the simple means. Now if you buy a compound, then the third year you get a 5% increase on the $105. But I never sell that because that's too expensive. But I do sell the simple because I think it's important. If you don't use this for 20 years from now, everything's going to cost more than twice as much as it costs now. So you need that simple interest inflation protection. So if you buy $50 a day or $80 a day, buy the 5% inflation protection. The problem with the AAL and Lutheran Brotherhood ones is they're a little bit expensive, not too much, because they do have to pay the claim. They can't afford not to. But they don't have home care protection in that. And like CNA, who I sell for, and I used to sell for American Express, too, Amex, it's called AMEX, but I sell for CNA. The reason that I sell for them is that every policy, you automatically get some home care, too. So if you buy a four-year policy, and that's what I recommend, is a four-year plan. You can buy a two-year plan, one-year plan, two-year plan, three-year plan, four-year plan, five, and six, and then you can buy forever plan that would pay forever. I always sell usually a four-year plan because in most cases, people will only be in the convalescent home about 2.5 years. That's the average. And a four-year plan, I feel, is about all people can afford because I try to keep the price down.
Yeah.
And so I recommend a four-year plan with a simple inflation factor. And in your situation, what I would recommend is in 90% of the cases, the man never uses it anyway because you will take care of your husband in the home until he dies in most cases. But who's there to take care of you later on? So I would still recommend that you buy the plan even though your husband will not be able to get one. Now it's possible that a company like Lutheran Brothers or somebody may sell you a plan for your husband. But there'd have to be a little bit of illegal activity on the part of the agent in order to do that.